would have been good to have clarified that before the service. You'll get to hear him again, like we always do, right? Right? You get to hear that thing, right? Cora, right? Akora? Is that what it's called? Yeah, okay. All right, so you're going to love what's coming up now, though, because it's my pleasure to introduce our special guest. Since the end of last year, I've been doing this series of what I call reconciling angel interviews, and we talk very much about reconciliation in this center, which is sort of the coming together of opposites to create something greater. And I've had several people come, and it's my honor this week to have Reverend Chris Bergstrom come. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Chris. So she was a public school educator for 35 years, a teacher, an administrator, and preschool and university as well. She was an ordained congregational minister for 10 years and a hospital chaplain for 5 years. My memories of Chris are from the interfaith group, and I had the honor of serving with her in several interfaith events and attending meetings with her. But my very favorite memory of Chris was when I was on the beach one time. I used to walk my dog, Stella, up on the beach in Padaro Lane. And I ran into Chris and her spouse one time, and I didn't have Stella with me, I just had Bartok. And Chris and Tori, her spouse, asked me, "How am I doing?" And because of who they are and what I know about them, I could tell them the truth, that I wasn't doing very well because it was my first trip to the beach without Stella after she passed. And they were so kind and so comforting and so loving that I liked them already, but I liked them even more after that. In fact, I loved them. So let's do our best to welcome our lovely guest speaker, Reverend Chris, and here she is.
Here.
So, welcome.
Thank you.
Gosh. You said you wanted to do something before we even started.
I did. I wanted to thank that man for that music. Wow. Thank you. And you noticed, I think, in the little program or before, you had asked me to come up with a little title or a theme for what I was going to share. And I think the beauty of getting older is that you're a little braver, a little less fearless, and more willing to ask questions and make statements that you know intuitively everybody else is thinking, right? So I think about the poet Rilke, who said, "Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves." So that's sort of been my faith journey as we get into our talk here. And I think the older I get, the more I lean left. My past has been in liberal or progressive Christianity. And I told you this morning that I'm leaning left and probably moving more toward an interfaith orientation. Mm. But there's something freeing and energizing about getting older. And stopping the hair color. So I'm only an expert on my own experiences, and I can barely remember those, so hurry up.
Okay, we got you covered. So if you can think back, okay, think way back to when you were growing up and when you were in seminary, we are also welcoming in this service our LGBTQ plus friends. And so there was a time when the Christian church was particularly not very open to our friends, and still some churches are not.
That
so
time is now.
Yeah. That, okay. I know so many Christians that are. So but anyway, let's talk a little bit about you. What was that like for you?
Well, I never served in the military, but I think Don't Ask and Don't Tell permeated growing up as I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And like many of you, felt at times that if people only knew, right, they wouldn't think I was terrific as I wanted to be. But again, my gift was that I went to seminary later in life. Mm-hmm. And I learned the secret that people learn when they go to seminary. It's kind of like a secret handshake. The most reputable biblical scholarship, modern and postmodern, that's available is taught in nearly all standard mainstream seminaries. And it is this, that the ancient scriptures were written in the spirit of something called Midrash. And Midrash is this, that the ancient scriptures and teachings and remembrances were never intended to be taken literally, and they were never intended to arm wrestle towards certainty. In the spirit of Midrash, the stories and the teachings were always intended for this, for people to come together, engage in conversation, reflect, and learn the truth, small t or large t, about how to live. And so as I made my way through seminary, I marveled at what happened when my counterparts left seminary, which is they went back into their denominational stream and they sang from their denominational hymnal. And I will tell you why. Because they didn't go into ministry with a pension. I went into ministry with a pension. I thought, what are they going to do, fire me? And then I realized I was saying what they were saying and asking what they were asking. I'll never forget getting a phone call from a woman who said, would you be willing to marry a same-sex couple? Mm-hmm. And I said, absolutely. Why? She said, well, I go to a Methodist church in a nearby town, and I love my church, and they love us, but they can't marry us. And I was perplexed. And so, of course, I pulled that thread. I'm all about questions. And I found out that the minister who would have personally embraced that opportunity was not allowed to, based on the denominational structure and framework and protocol. And then when you talk to people, you realize it's a fear-based response, and I don't blame them. Our denominational friends can lose their pension, their insurance, right, if they drive outside the lines or color outside the lines. So what I've learned is what I'm trying to share, and I think the good news, if you will, is that we're all in this. It sounds like High School Musical. We're all in this together, right? And we sort it out together. And that when people push you toward a point of certainty, you can resist by opening up with questions.
Mm. Wow. Like that. Go for it.
To that end.
Yes.
How long do we have?
Yeah.
To that end, I was talking to my partner, Tori, who's sorry she couldn't be here with us this morning, she said, "What can you do something, can you talk about this whole idea of tolerance? Because nobody wants to be merely tolerated, mm-hmm. right?" Mm-hmm. And I've been there, I've experienced that. But the reality is, I think we need to give people permission, whether they are Christians who come from maybe a fear-based or narrow tradition. We need to give people permission to understand that tolerance might be the first but not the last step, mm-hmm. right, in mm-hmm. the pyramid or the ladder. And that tolerance can lead you to understanding and acceptance can lead you to inclusion. But that as we make our way up that pyramid toward respect, we also know, and we have sung this morning, and you have shared this morning, that love is always the peak of that pyramid, and love is always the answer to whatever question we have about including people, about honoring people. And my goal in the progressive Christian ministry was always to challenge and fight hard against anything that would limit or denigrate anybody. Father Richard Rohr is a Franciscan priest, and I read him frequently, and I love him. And he, something he wrote this week, he said, part of our trouble is that when we think about identity, we limit identity through labels, mm-hmm. right? And that really we can expand our identity when we move open and up and see that our highest form of identity is that we are all in this together, mm-hmm. that we are all part of the human family, and anything that denigrates, whether it's sexual orientation or housing status or socioeconomic or look or the man who comes to church and smells like onions, right? Or the guy who comes to church in really short shorts. All of those things.
Anybody? No.
My friend Iris is here, and we know what we're talking about.
Okay.
But the reality is this. Anything that limits or denigrates or separates is the enemy to love. And frankly, I don't want to be on that side.
Mm. So let me just repeat that for all of us, because it's so important. It's so basic. You would think we would know this by now, right? But we don't, do we? Because I know that there are times when I denigrate and I separate. And it doesn't usually have to do, it's more about the short shorts kind of thing. It's not about race or orientation. It's more like, look at that person in the short shorts. Ew.
What's
like
up that. With that?
What's yeah. up with that, right? So anything that denigrates or separates is like the antithesis to love. It keeps us from experiencing the glory of love and the power of love. And you know, it's said in the affirmation today, that very lengthy affirmation that I wrote, that we receive love as we give it away.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, do you all call this a sanctuary?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I love that we call our gathering place a sanctuary, because we are all like refugees mm-hmm. from whatever we've lived through. And more often than not, religion has hurt us. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, how many of you grew up as children in this faith tradition?
Wow.
How many of you grew up in a different, maybe more mainstream faith tradition, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Methodist, yeah, Catholic, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is that we've all been damaged by people forcing us into that lower identity. Mm-hmm. And I, luckily, you know, with gray hair and a pension, I said, no, that's not how it's going to be. For me, anyway.
So is the answer a pension? Is that what you're saying? How do we get one of those? Okay.
Well, in a word, yeah.
Yeah.
But let me tell you why. You know, yeah. Peter, Paul, and Mary? I'm Peter, speaking Paul, and Mary? To people who have the same hair color I do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Paul Stuckey, you know, is one mm-hmm. of those guys. And his wife is a congregational minister. That's my tradition. And I met with her one day, and we talked about pensions, and we talked about denominations. We said those dividing lines are crippling and limiting people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would advocate that, my buddy who was a Lutheran minister should be able to come to the congregational church and not lose his insurance and his pension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think those denominational ties limit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It sounds like the pension thing is not yours, but the idea, it sounds like the bigger issue is fear, that fear of loss.
Fear and security,
fear
of course.
Fear of security, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so whether or not we have a pension, you know, if we're fearing something, if we're fearing inclusivity or what have you, because we're afraid we're going to lose something, that, again, is that opposite of love type of structure.
It is, and I think it's a structure that denigrates the people who are within, and it limits those who look from the outside.
Yeah.
And you know, structure and protocol and opinion don't draw people. To
right.
spirit.
Right.
Love draws people.
Love, absolutely.
And, you know, in our tradition, in the ancient scriptures, the opposite of love is not hate.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite of love is fear.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. There you go. Hey, we're talking, yeah. You got to come here after you.
I do. I do.
Yeah. You can guest speak.
I'm happy to.
Okay, good.
Hold on. Lower your expectations. We're not done yet.
See, that was great. This wasn't in my list of pre-questions that I gave you, but because you've already answered some of these already, my questions. You did like the whole thing in like two seconds.
That's
no, it was great.
That's kind of how
great.
I am.
No, you got a lot to say.
I always want to be the first one to buzz in.
No, but you got a lot to say and you're succinct, babe. So, I was raised in your what was your last church, the Congregational Church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very, very, I call it benign. They were not very rigid or constrictive in any way. It was mm-hmm. a lovely experience. But I do have someone in my family that is a fundamentalist Christian. Mm-hmm. And I also have a nephew that's gay, that's married to a man. Mm-hmm. And I did the wedding. And when the topic comes up, which it doesn't very often, you know, I guess I'm afraid that she's going to try and impose her views upon me with a lot of scriptural quotes. And how would you handle that?
Well, you know, I'm a terribly flawed, well-meaning individual.
See, you are so in the right place.
Well, I mean, you know, really, am I going to come? Yeah, I'm going to come and lie in church?
Yeah,
really,
you're not going to lie in church.
So that my instinct, it's something I work on my whole life. But my instinct is always if pushed to push back,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm not proud of that. But I'll just. My name is Chris, and I'm in. Flawed. And I was also an elementary school teacher and elementary school principal, so my real response is, I know you are, but what am I? But in my better moments, I have learned this. I have learned that people only know what they know, right? They only know what they know, and they're doing the best they can, mm-hmm. right? And so I used to say to parents all the time in school, you know, I know that you're not sending your bad kids to school and keeping the good ones at home. Right? So whether it's it's the Thanksgiving table or it's the occasion of a wedding or whatever, I am learning to try and give some grace. And with that, ask the question, mm-hmm. which is, you know, what makes you say that? Or can you tell me what your understanding of the Bible is? Now, I, again, in the interest of full disclosure, I can't wait for them to answer that question.
Okay.
Right.
So let's say I answer that question. I say, well, the Bible is the Word of God.
The
and
Word
it's
of God.
Infallible.
Right. Literal Word of
Literal
God.
Literal Word of God, infallible. If it's in the Bible, we got to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it gives me the opportunity to say, I have a love and respect and appreciation for the Bible as well. Mm-hmm. So there's step number one is you find some common ground.
Good.
Before you give them the whammy. But then, and then I say, my understanding is different. Mm-hmm. And because Jesus is such a big part of that faith tradition, well, yeah. I say, and in the teaching and the life upbringing of Jesus, I have learned to understand the Bible through the lens and the spirit of Midrash.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've heard that, right?
Yeah.
Which is that the Bible is the inspired word of God, as is so much else in the world that brings us to love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And then, because I have studied, I can tell story after story after story of Jesus calling people to him in love rather than separating and judging them by label.
Yeah.
But my big answer is that I say, I have a different understanding. Mm-hmm. We have something in common. The Bible is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And mine goes back to the ancient root of Midrash. And trust me, they're writing that down on a cocktail napkin.
Midrash, yeah.
To look that up because they want to prove me wrong.
Yeah. So tell us again what Midrash is.
And Midrash is the culture, the ancient culture, Hebrew culture, of understanding a teaching or a story or a passage in a way that leads to personal understanding, reflection, and truth. The teachings of the scriptures were never intended to be taken literally because that is a lesser form of truth. Right? That is the one right answer.
I'm going, I love her.
That is the one right answer, bringing it down to a finer point. Midrash opens it up and says, whatever you learn and hear and receive today will be unique for you. And unique for you. But if it brings us all to the mountaintop, all to the place of love, then that is what the divine spirit's goal is, even in the Christian faith, right? Jesus was saying, whatever you do, do what brings you to peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. And I was so bummed about the self-control part.
I can understand that.
So I believe we have to find some commonalities. People are never going to be changed by opinion, and they're never going to be changed by arm wrestling and Bible quiz bowl, right? They are going to be changed by example and love and grace.
Bible quiz bowl. Yeah, there you go. That's great. You know what, though? As Chris was speaking, I suddenly for myself realized the perfection of the Bible, because I like the Bible. Many of you know that I quote it frequently, but I just realized the perfection of it is that it does stir up a lot of questioning, and it does stir up a lot of dissent, and that's a beautiful place to start with, getting into a place of deeper knowing of oneself and of the other, until we get to a place when we realize that there is no other. So thank you for clarifying
that
the Bible
whole
for
provocative
me.
Nature. I mean, you can imagine in the ancients, the Hebrew ancients, sitting around in a room provoking and poking each other and talking about, I think it's this, I think it's that.
Yeah.
But imagine having that conversation and walking out thinking, well then, what's my higher road? And we, at Church of the Foothills, and that's where from which I retired, we had this image that, life is a mountain, right? And that there are different pathways up to the top of that mountain. And I can only see one part of the mountain, and there are pathways on this side and pathways on the back side, and they aren't all straight up. And we're all on our path up. Even the fundamentalist who deserves some grace, as opposed to me trying to arm wrestle.
Right. Absolutely. And I loved what you said, that we don't get there by arm wrestling or arguing or Bible quizzes, that it's out of love. Love will transform us.
My partner her church is yoga, Sunday mornings. Mm. Yoga, and then she takes a 96-year-old lady to the grocery store. So that's her church.
Good.
And when I was preparing for my ordination, she would put it on the calendar as the Bible Quiz Bowl and Smackdown for Jesus. So, that's how we are in our house.
Yes, yeah, I gotcha. Well, my sister, not the fundamentalist Christian one, but the other one, had something else. It's too rude to say in church for my ordination, so I'll tell you privately.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, goodness. So we're almost out of time, and this has been so wonderful. But one thing I always ask people that come and speak in terms of reconciliation and greater love is, what can you give us an assignment?
Can I give you an assignment?
Yes. Can you give us an assignment? Something that we can do to further
the cause. Well, as a principal, my role as a school principal is like my role as a pastor. It's don't run in the hallways and be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I think the thing that has worked for me, and I think I err a little on the side of trying to be a little too cerebral, but I read and I study and I read and I study. And even Bill Gates says, his world is transformed by what he reads and how he understands new ideas and concepts.
Yeah.
But I think the hardest challenge is to, what was it, Nietzsche who said, I have it somewhere here, beware when fighting monsters that you don't become a monster. Mm-hmm. And so that's the challenge for me. Because, I'm having a good time and waiting for Phil Donahue to come out. We all have been hurt. We all have been hurt. And if you had a couple of more hours, I'd show you the slideshow and tell you the stories, right? Mm-hmm. Of being hurt because I was a woman, being hurt because I was a gay woman, being hurt because I said what I thought. But you bring that back to how then shall we live?
Right. Right.
And I pray every day to give the measure of grace that I have been given by people like you, by people like you, by the countless people in my life who taught me how to love and were examples of that love.
Mm-hmm. You know that every single one of our reconciling angels that has come up here and spoken has given some version of that, mm-hmm. of that.
I have a little quote. This was from a guy, somebody. He was in the room with Steve Jobs when they were coming up with a campaign to think different, which as a school teacher makes me crazy because that should be an adverb.
Absolutely.
But he says, here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in square holes, the ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules. They have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify them, or vilify them, and the only thing you cannot do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as crazy, others may see them as genius, because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes.
Will you pray with me?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Love lifted me. Love lifted me when nothing else would do. Love lifted me. Love lifted me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's beautiful. Thank you.